Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hello?
Ngā mihi nui and welcome to Our Changing World. Ko Alison Balance tēnei. Tonight the show is all about New Zealand's native parrot, the kea, or mountain parrot. The kea has repeatedly been shown in problem-solving tests to be the smartest bird on the block. Its fearless, curious nature make it a crowd favourite at some tourist hotspots. But these attributes, which make it superbly adapted to life in the hills and forests of the South Island, are turning into its downfall around people. The Kea Conservation Trust is trying to help the birds better survive in 21st century New Zealand by working with the communities who live with the bird. I'm off to Arthur's Pass, a little alpine village in the middle of a national park, to spend time with the Kea Conservation Trust. Laurie Young is an ecologist and community engagement coordinator for the Trust, and George Moon is a volunteer who helps run the Kea Sightings database.
We've come up to a place that we call Death's Corner, also known as the Aotearoa Viaduct Lookout, and often there's a group of kea hanging around here, and we've come to look for some of those today.
Who are you expecting to see here, George?
There's often a few birds seen up here, but one of the most well-known is one called Tuhura, and he's actually got one eye after an accident last year, but he's been patched up and he's a regular visitor here. There's also an adult male and adult female, Schist and Trillian, who are sometimes seen up here as well.
So what's the gear you've got there?
I like to play a couple of calls sometimes when we get to a site to see if there's any kea in the vicinity. So I've got a Fox Pro sound speaker. It's pretty one-directional, so it's quite loud. And then a couple of different kea calls. And so I'll try out a couple of different calls and see if it gets any response.
So if they're around, they're pretty good at calling back?
They are, and sometimes they'll call and sometimes they'll just come and land straight away. But it may be too hot yet because it's still quite early and warm.
So it's a beautiful sunny day. Do they not like warm days?
They seem to come out a bit later on these warmer days, I'd say.
So what's the name of that call, George?
That one's a happy kea. Here comes one in now.
Yeah, so one's just flowing in. That's exciting. So now I need to get
doing laps.
Yeah, get my binoculars out and see if we
just
can
gone and landed in the pylon. Just watching us.
Beautiful. Especially when you see them from underneath and the bright orange wings. Right, I just might go and get my catching gear and see if we can entice this one down.
It's chatting away
up
there.
Yeah, this is quite a playful call that we're playing back now, and often it elicits a bit of a playful response. There's been a study done by a guy called Raoul Schwing a couple of years ago looking at some of these calls and what they might mean, and he found that this kind of wow, wow, wow type call is a bit of a playful one.
It sounds playful.
Yeah, it does. And they even sort of respond to it sometimes when you stand there and say wow, 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 wow. You can tell if it's a young one because there's yellow around the eye and the cere, which is above the nostril, beak, especially the lower bill. And this one's definitely got yellow around, so it's either a fledgling or a second-year bird. If it was this year's fledgling also, it would have a bright yellow crown on top of its head. Well, whitey, yellow, golden colour, and that's how you can tell.
This must be one of the places where it's easiest for people, particularly tourists, to interact with kea.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's kind of a good and a bad thing, because people come from all around the world to Arthur's Pass area to see kea, as you're pretty certain to see one while you're here. And it's kind of unfortunate that they land in the car park and investigate people's camper vans and buses and things, because they actually get run over more often than you think. And we've had maybe 10 deaths by vehicle accident in the past 2 years.
10 deaths?
Yep.
That's pretty
yeah.
sobering.
Four of them happened at once just underneath us on the main highway, and it was weird because it was all around the same time, and we managed to figure out that actually a truck had spilled a whole lot of cream on the highway, and so they were attracted to that, which was a real shame. All these young ones. Yeah. But in Arthur's Pass Village, just 3 weeks ago, one got hit by a car just going way too fast through the village, and we could definitely do with some slow down sort of initiatives there, maybe some speed bumps. Or
there were some big signs put in last year for a while, weren't there?
Yeah, that's right, but they were on those electronic boards and they seem to have disappeared, so we could definitely use some of those back again. Oh, that was actually the Kia calling. Probably calling his mates. There's another one coming in.
Now they're chatting to each other, that's
yeah.
lovely. So Laura's trick now is to try and catch the bird. So they've both come in and landed nearby. So Kia are incredibly curious, so you've set up something for them to basically...
Yep, use their curiosity against
them. Tease them in.
Yeah, pretty much. Can't help themselves.
Now the other bird's coming close as well, so what can you tell me about that?
The other bird now I can see is a sub-adult female by the looks of it, with a band combination that's a white G on brown. So we banded that one last year.
So you'll be able to look in the database and see who she is.
Yeah. Here comes the baby one. You can tell she's a female because look at her top bill.
So the females, their bills are smaller?
Yeah, the top bill compared to the males.
There's another one on the top of the pylon.
Yay.
And interestingly, the sun's just disappearing and it's getting cooler.
Mm. Yeah.
It's coming down.
That one's very scruffy.
It's very scruffy, that one.
There's a lot of these slightly older ones are in molt at the moment, so they're looking a little bit tatty. I'll just have a look through my binos which one we're looking at over there. Ah, Tahuta. One-eyed Tahuta. He just spent a couple of months in the wildlife hospital with his injuries, and he's surviving well in the wild with one eye, so that's great to see. Okay, here we go. Four birds around us at the moment. It's all go.
How many years does it take for them to mature?
We generally call them adult at about 4 years. So their coloration's normally pretty dark by then, and they can start breeding at about 4 years of age.
And until that time, they tend to hang around with each other a lot, don't they, and socialise?
Yeah, they do. They, especially after fledging from about January to about March, they form big social groups and get together and play and learn from each other and learn from adults. Here we go, one's picking up a stick right now and chewing it up. They spend a lot of time looking like they're feeding, but actually just ripping apart wood, and it's possibly good for their beak. They're always picking up rubbish around here, which is awful. When I did my PhD, I looked at their diet and looked specifically for seeds and their droppings, and I found a lot of bits of plastic and rubber and just horrendous stuff coming out the other side.
So you've got one.
We do.
Yeah, we got one, and it's the only unbanded one that we've seen today, so it's great.
So it was the one you wanted.
It's the one we wanted. So now I'm just getting all my gear ready that we need for banding and taking blood samples and things.
When we catch the Kia, we take the blood samples, as Laura's preparing for, and also feather samples so we can test for vitamin D and diseases and DNA analysis, and also lead analysis, as well as they get banded, measured and weighed.
He feels very fluffy and nice and healthy and plump, so that's a good sign. And I start by putting this unique identifier metal band on one of his legs.
What's that one? V1417.
So these plastic coloured bands. This one's bright yellow and it's got the letter B on it.
Yes, so it's got what we'd call black B on yellow. So the point of these plastic bands is they're really easy to identify individual kia. And through this citizen science project, the Kia Sighting Project, people can easily see and report back on individual kia, and we can keep an eye on the population and what's happening there. So that's why we use these bright plastic bands.
So yeah, soon this bird will get loaded onto our database and it'll have a name, and you can go follow what this bird gets up to and where he gets seen.
How does the naming work?
That's a good question. So sometimes it just happens to be a name that someone comes up with, but the other option is you can actually name a kia yourself. So as a way of raising money for kia conservation, you can go online and have a look at the birds that need names and give it a name and get listed as a sponsor. And it's really quite a cool thing, because we often have community groups sponsor as well. So for example, the Littleton Cubs did some fundraising and they got to call a kia Cody, an adult kia that sometimes up around this area.
Okay, now we've done that, we're going to take a wee tiny bit of blood sample, and then I put it in a little capillary tube so we get exactly the right amount of blood for the lead machine.
So the last thing we're just doing here is taking their weight.
710 grams.
It's run away about 2 or 3 metres.
Yep, and just back to its usual tricks, clearly not bothered at all.
As the newly minted black bee on yellow saunters happily away, it's time for us to relocate down to Arthur's Pass Village.
Yeah, I think I can hear about 8 at least different ones flying around. It's quite exciting, really, when they're all calling and interacting and playing and landing on the treetops. And
do we know what these calls mean?
Not a lot is known about different calls and what they mean, but we do know that this particular one where they're, it's quite a playful one. So as we heard up at Death's Corner, they seem to do it quite a bit in the evening and respond to each other and feed off each other even.
Yeah, they're very chatty parrots.
They are. And they can be so quiet too, it's amazing. They can sneak up on you and you won't even know they're there, and suddenly you'll be, oh, hello, there's one.
Now tell me about the road trip that you've just been doing.
So with my role in the Kia Conservation Trust, we have been funded for 3 years to look at lead poisoning in kia populations, especially in places where they interact with humans. Arthur's Pass, Franz Josef, the Milford Road, Homer Tunnel, Aoraki, Mount Cook. And so I've been to all of those places over the last 3 weeks, doing advocacy work with the KCT and catching kia and banding them and taking these blood samples for lead testing. And we've found some alarmingly high lead levels, especially around this area, Arthur's Pass and Mount Cook.
So where are the birds getting it from? Is that things like lead roofing nails?
Yeah, exactly. So the lead head nails, the flashings that are under the ridge cap on roofs, lead weights from tyres, cars. There's actually a lot of it in the environment. We found a whole lot down by Homer Tunnel from the old tunnel construction just a couple of weeks ago. It's amazing how much we picked up, about 5 or 6 kilos, and there's still a whole lot there. So now the people are all into action down there and are going to go and get it all removed, and hopefully that'll take out a whole lot of more lead from the environment around there. But quite a few of them showed up with high lead levels, and some of them last year were treated for lead poisoning in the Dunedin Wildlife Hospital. And I saw one of them that had been released last week and took his lead levels again, and he was healthy, so that's good. Didn't get back into it. We've got a bit of a program going on, not only in Arthur's Pass Village, but the KCT has been pushing the Department of Conservation to get lead removed from huts and things in the backcountry. So that's been happening over the last few months. A whole lot of volunteers up in northwest Nelson have been working on various huts. Not only kia eat lead, but they think it tastes sweet to them, but other species as well have been, I think, tui and kaka and weka have been found with lead in their system. So it's pretty common, unfortunately, but it's something we can do something about, and looks like we're making quite a lot of progress lately, so it's great.
Part of going around the country too, you've been banding birds like you're doing here. Why are you banding the birds and putting these really easy to read colour bands on them?
basically harnessing that enthusiasm and excitement that all the public seem to have about Kia and getting that to capture really interesting scientific information about Kia numbers and population and things like how far they travel and disperse or what the local population might be doing and what the turnover of that population might be. And so we're learning lots of interesting little things about it, and I see the real value in this project. Getting people to record individually banded Kia into the sightings database will be especially in the longer term, where we can look at sort of numbers over time in a particular place. But I think in the shorter term as well, we're learning a lot too. Like, for instance, we had one bird that used to be a real scavenger here in the village, and we were on one of the more backcountry surveys a couple of months ago, and she turned up there, and then she turned up way in another valley a couple of months later. So it's really interesting to see some of those things, how far they can go, and not just hanging around in this kind of front country environment.
What has this year been like for Kia? We saw that young bird before up at Death's Corner. Have you been seeing lots of young birds?
Yeah, this year seems to be amazing for Kia, for young Kia. It seems to have been a really big breeding year compared to the last couple, I'd say. And it's probably got something to do with the abundant resources in the environment this year.
All that fruiting and seeding.
All that fruiting and seeding. I watched six birds, feeding on silver beech seed recently. They just spent about 4 hours in a row non-stop feeding on that silver beech seed, and they just weren't interested in anything else. Now we've got a Kia just landed, so I'm going to take off and see who that is.
White eight
on green. So you can even see the bands without binoculars sometimes. These birds are quite curious about people. They come quite close sometimes, and it's a good thing for people to do, get involved in the Kia sightings. Yeah, often people like to do something to interact with Kia, and it's often feed them, which is a total no-no. So having something else to do, like, oh, I can see their bands and get some useful information. So when they come close, you can do something like take a photo and report it into the sightings database, and that's far more useful than feeding them.
So you've got a couple of unbanded birds here to aim for?
Yeah, three unbanded fledglings by the looks. So that's exciting.
Some keen locals have come to help.
I'm Nick, an enthusiastic Arthur's Pass local.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jamin. I live in Arthur's Pass. I like help out catching Kia around again to help with the sighting project to get them banded and keep them all being identified so that anyone and everyone can find them and point them out and take note of them for the database.
Hi, I'm Peter from local from Arthur's Pass and chairperson of the Arthur's Pass Wildlife Trust.
So the Arthur's Pass Wildlife Trust does a bit of work around here. I've been here, it was a few years ago now, and they were doing work with great spotted kiwi and doing lots of predator trapping.
Yep. So we do, it did start off initially with great spotted kiwi, but then it was realised that it was helping all the wildlife in the park. So it's sort of continued. Getting more involved with Kia now, thanks to Laura and the Kia Sightings Project.
So are you getting any sense yet from that sightings database of these birds that you might see here in the village? Are they popping up in other places as well?
Yeah, they are. Laura was saying the other day that there was one that was tagged up either in the village or up at the Viaduct Lookout, and then it was sighted down near Hokitika, which, you know, that's 100 k's by road. So I guess as the Kia flies, it might be about 60, 70 k's. And so they're definitely travelling around quite a bit.
That one's chewing on something on the roof.
Yeah, thankfully that one's not lead. In this key area, there's been a few roofs that had lead flashings and lead nails, so some of them have been stripped of that and the lead's all been covered.
Well, that's very good, because it does sound like some of them have very elevated lead levels.
They do, yeah, and that's the key problem with them. And so when we managed to get a testing and showed that they have a lot of lead, they get shipped down to the South Island Wildlife Hospital and they deal to them down there. It takes about 3 weeks. They have to sort of do what's called chelation therapy of some sort. It takes a wee while, but that's worth it. And then someone brings them back up, depending on who's transporting them down. There's been several people who've been used to transport them, just locals, batch holders. The local policeman transported one down once. That was pretty cool. And Cedric from Esco Shuttles, he'll quite often transport them if they're needed as well.
Oh, that's great community support.
It is, yeah. It's really good.
Just going back to the Arthur's Pass Wildlife Trust, what other work are you doing around here at the moment, apart from helping out on the KIA project?
We've got a really extensive set of predator traps, mainly DOC 150s, which are stoke traps, and we have approximately 900 that we maintain and manage, and so we're in the process of upgrading some of them in some certain valleys. So we've just put in a big funding application as well for the DOC Community Fund, and hopefully that will enable us to increase the number of traps and the number of checks we do on them.
But you're pretty happy with the results you're seeing? The bird life looks like it's thriving?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. We did start on kiwi. That was the main focus, and the kiwi numbers were increasing in the valley. We had quite a few that had transmitters on them, and the good thing about this kiwi project was that the kiwis were left to raise their chicks in the wild rather than the eggs getting taken away to a sanctuary and getting hatched there and kept in a wildlife sanctuary till they were a year old. They were actually left in the wild and they were surviving because of the number of traps we had in the area.
You're going to have a bit of a challenging year ahead of you with this mega mast here.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. And because there's actually a big 1080 blitz, I suppose, but there's also a 15-kilometre exclusion zone around Arthur's Pass because of the habit of kia to scavenge in this area. So as a result of that, there's no 1080 within 15 km of the village, so that really makes our trapping program much more important.
Yeah, the problem around this village, I think, is that there's lots of rubbish that they interact with, there's food that people feed them,
and
it all teaches them to try new things.
It does, yeah, unfortunately, yeah. And they just sort of get used to trying new things, and so they just hang around here and they'll just try anything they can find. So we're trying to get better signs. We've got various signs up around the village and around the national park. I'm encouraging people to not feed the kia, and that is working in some places, but there's still, it needs to be improved at the store and the campground and around those sorts of areas. That's just so that passing tourists get the message as well.
It's lovely to see so many birds though.
It is, yeah. Yeah. But it's just a shame that they do congregate around this area where they know in the evening they'll get fed. But hopefully that will be stopped soon.
I'm kind of hot on not feeding wildlife.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I figure it's much better to leave the birds do their own thing.
Yep.
And be part of the ecosystem. You know, if they're out foraging in the wild, then they're actually performing a really valuable function.
Yeah,
they eat all those berries. They
exactly.
spread the seeds everywhere.
Seed dispersal. Yeah, very precisely. Yeah, and there's been studies done on that as well, and they disperse seed better than any other native bird apparently, because they spread around a lot more. They fly around a lot more than the other ones.
The team work until it's dark, and they're back at dawn the next day to carry on catching and banding.
So you've just had another successful morning. You've banded two more kia. So how many does that make it? Last night and this morning, that's five?
Yeah, I think we've caught five. You lose track sometimes.
I have to say, there's a lot of young kia around. It is great to see.
Oh, it's so promising. I hope that most of them make it through to adulthood, and I especially hope there's lots of potential breeding adult females out there in 3 years' time, 4 years' time.
So in terms of birds you've banded, you've been doing this road trip, you've been to Fiordland, you've been to Araki, you've been to Franz Josef. How many birds have you managed to band?
In Araki we did five. We only had one day there because the weather was quite bad the other days. And then we went to the Milford Road, and there's a few sites along there. We got 13 altogether over 4 days. And then at Franz Josef and Okurito Forest, we got 15 in total. And now we're back here in Arthur's Pass, we've got five. So however many that equals.
So we get the impression there's lots of birds around. Do we actually have any idea what the national population is?
Estimating a population is pretty difficult. The best estimate at the moment is somewhere between 3,000 and 7,000.
So do we have any idea how many birds there might have been, for instance, say, in a place like Arthur's Pass?
Not exactly, although past studies indicate that there would have been a lot more than now. So Dick Jackson, he was a researcher here back in the late 50s and early 60s, and he spent a few summers around here dedicating all of his time to monitoring kia, and went to kia nests and tried to get a handle on the population and what was going on in the area. And over two summers he banded something like at least 900 kia. So over the past two summers, now, for instance, we've probably banded maybe 50 or 60 in the area. So that sort of tells you that there must have been far greater numbers around the area then than now.
So a kea just a mountain bird? We call them the mountain parrot.
Somewhat misleading, I think. We do call them a mountain parrot, and they do spend a lot of time in the alpine areas of the South Island, but it's probably that they're more a forest bird, actually. So most nests that we know of are actually in the forest. There are ones above tree line, but they do live and breed in the forest for a lot of the year. Over winter, they start in about July, they start nesting. Fledglings emerge around about December, January. So they're in there for a long time, with the adult male coming and feeding the female and then the chicks in the nest cavity. So yeah, they spend a lot of time in the forest, and then especially on the west coast you can see that they really are well adapted to living in the forest. And then in about January they start coming up above the tree line and feeding on all the abundant alpine fruits and things out there, and they do make themselves quite known to climbers and trampers and people up in the tops.
Yeah, and you'll even see them down very, very close to sea level, especially on the west coast near Okarito.
Now, George, tell me a little bit about your big kea database.
If you go to keadatabase.nz, you can go online and you can have a look at all of the kea that have been banded, and it's pretty cool. So if you go out to, say, Death's Corner and you see a kea out there, say, yellow G on black, you can go and type that into our database and you can find out that his name is Tahuta, and you know, you can report a sighting of him. It's pretty cool. It enables us to keep an eye on who's where, and we get reportings of kea that haven't been seen in years, and it's good to see that they're still out there.
How many records have you got in the database?
So to date, I've had over 3,300 sightings. I've got sightings right from the bottom of Fiordland all the way to the top of the Kahurangi. But the cool thing about the kea database is it's what's called open source software. So anyone can go on and look at the code and contribute. And the cool thing is if people wanted to make a kaka database, or if people wanted to create one for a pestry island with their banded birds, then that code is available for them to look at.
And you're a bit of an award winner.
Yeah, so it was really cool. Last year we got recognised at the New Zealand Open Source Awards in the category of science. We were up against some pretty amazing contenders, but for some reason we managed to take out the prize, which is pretty cool.
Congratulations, that's excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, George. George Moon is a volunteer who helps run the kea sightings database, and ecologist Laura Young is the Kea Conservation Trust Community Engagement Coordinator. A very big thanks too to the Arthur's Pass Wildlife Trust, especially Chair Pete Neal. And that's Our Changing World for this week. To listen to that story again, find links to websites and check out some kea photos, just head to our webpage, rnz.co.nz/ourchangingworld. You can sign up for our weekly email newsletter there too. Staying with the New Zealand parrot theme, you'll also find all the episodes of the Kakapo Files podcast there too. A quick update since last week's episode. Two adult male kakapo have died in the past week, bringing the total adult population of kakapo to just 144 birds. The Elemental Chemistry podcast, meanwhile, is up to cobalt and copper. Stay in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook, where we are RNZ Science. Thanks for your company. Until next time, it's good night from me, Alison Balance, Paul Marie.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.